With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Signal, the podcast from Christians in Media. Welcome back. This is your wonderful February, slightly sunny but a little bit chilly episode. And we are back in the studio and I have the wonderful Mr. Sam Hales in the studio with me.
Hello.
Hello, nice to have you. And the lady Ruth Jackson is also here as well.
Hi. Hello. I'm not wonderful though, apparently.
You are a lady though. The lady.
I'll say that.
That was like
I'll
an official
that.
The sure. lady title.
Okay, great. Cool.
Excellent. Coming up on this month's show, we've got some interesting stuff to chat about in the news. We're going to be talking about sharing your Bible passages in public and whether or not that is something you should be doing more of, less of. We're going to talk about the announcement of the BBC and ITV looking to create a new digital partnership in content. We're going to be talking later on about praying in public and praying in the workplace. Is it something that you do and is it something that you should be still doing? And later on we've got recommendations for you as well, all coming up. Also be giving you the latest news about what we've got coming up in the calendar from Christians in Media and all of that still to come. So stay with us. You're listening to Signal from Christians in the Media. So, we are back. How are you both doing?
Sam,
you're feeling a bit ropey.
I'm surviving. I'll be okay. Thank you for checking in. Okay.
Such a trooper, Sam.
Well, I'm glad that you're both here. Thank you for your wonderful presence. And we're glad that you guys are back with us as well. We are back in our usual format, the three of us in the studio finally together. It feels like it's been ages since we've done this.
Yeah.
Too long. But I'm feeling very pleased to see you, even if Sam's looking a bit peaky.
It's always a pleasure to see you, James.
Lovely. Well, thank you for that.
Oh, there's a lot of love in here.
Not so much you, Ruth, but you know.
Yeah, you have to see her most days of the week, so that's fine. Yeah, the novelty effect has worn off. I'm still always impressed. Thank you. Thank you guys for listening, and we're coming back along to listen to us and natter on about things that are happening in the world of faith and media from this month's episode. We, like I said, are going to start off by looking at the news. And literally today, as we're recording, 27th of February, the BBC and ITV have announced that they are going to launch a Netflix or Amazon Prime type rival service that is going to bring the biggest of the crime dramas from the two stations together, also looking like there will be other organisations joining in the latter stage. The BBC Director General Tony Hall said that the aim was to launch something that they're codenaming BritBox in the UK in the second half of 2019, so it's in the latter stages, and they are concluding the final phase of talks to create something that will actually rival Netflix. The price was not announced, but Lord Hall said it would be competitive, and there have been several reports in the news that the service will cost around about £5 a month and include everything from crime dramas like Luther and Line of Duty, as well as also things like Love Island from ITV. So that is the kind of big news announcement that's happening in the media today. And what do you guys think about it? Would you be willing to pay a fiver for the big BBC back catalogue?
I think it might depend what's on it.
Well, BBC stuff is my assumption.
I know, but how much of it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes. I think there's a lot of opportunity.
They're going to have a job, I think, distinguishing it from iPlayer.
Okay.
There's so much available on iPlayer already. I don't know. I mean, I don't exactly get home in the evening and think, oh, I just have so much time on my hands. You know, I wish there was yet another thing I could subscribe to fill my time with more TV, because I've got so much time on my hands. Let's watch more TV.
I think it's probably more if you're watching a series or something and you think, oh, I'd love to go back and watch like the first five series to give this series context or whatever. Or, yeah. Oh, I haven't got into that at all. If I could watch the first five series, which is what you can do on the other streaming services, I suppose that's the point. point of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, programmes like Silent Witness, for example, everyone says is really good. I've never watched any of it because I never watched the first couple. It passes me by, right? So if I could go back and watch all of those... The thing that I'm more interested in is going back and watching all the like nostalgia TV stuff, the things that like I probably remember watching with my parents as a kid. But like if it was there, you know, back catalogues, I would actually probably go and
binge The Chronicles of Narnia. We're talking about The Chronicles of Narnia.
That wasn't necessarily where I was going, but good to see what Ruth
I think
has.
£5 is a very attractive price as well.
But depending on what it is, though.
Well, it's just old BBC and ITV content, as far as I can tell. It's not the new stuff, because the new stuff's already available on iPlayer and the ITV player.
And it's going to stay there, apparently, as well. The thing that I'd be quite interested in as well is how it's going to work out if you're a family user as well. So most people, you know, you pay the license fee per household, right? Regardless of whether there's one person in it or five. Netflix and these other things have all got multi-user prices. You know, are they going to do something like that? Are we going to be paying, like, a fiver for me to access all this stuff, but if I want my kids to be able to watch it on their iPad at the same time that we're watching something in the living room, we're going to have to pay twice? Those types of things I think are going to have to work through.
The exciting thing for me is kind of the clues in the name, BritBox, and they want to put something out there that it is British. You think so much of what we consume on Netflix especially, and even Amazon Prime and some of the others, a lot of that is American content, and I think it's great to be able to say actually there's some fantastic British programs out there that need watching as well, and to have its own program, I guess, that you can subscribe to see British TV. I think that's a good thing.
I wonder whether it's going to have an implication on the licence fee, because obviously it's not the current stuff, but there might be some people who are thinking, actually, I don't ever watch TV live, because who watches TV live now anyway? unless it's like the
people
Brits.
People were very upset when Songs of Praise was moved to lunchtime rather than...
That's true.
I don't know if you saw that story
moved to
the other
lunchtime.
Day. Yeah, people were very upset. And the argument, of course, you know, the one you're making, Ruth, is, but do anyone actually watch TV live these days? And a lot of people watch Songs of Praise, they do.
Okay, but I guess if you're one of those people who doesn't really watch TV live and you don't necessarily want to watch the modern stuff, actually, if you've got this BritBox and you've got other streaming services, you may well not need to pay the licence fee anymore. And is that going to be to the detriment of the Beeb, potentially?
Well, there you go. I mean, this is potentially built off of some organisational stuff that you may not know about. So in the US, there's already a service called BritBox. It's a streaming service in North America. Lord Hall has said that it's performing very well. It has 500,000 subscribers in the US, which is nothing compared to the multi-million users that the likes of Netflix have. But there was a comment this morning from Dame Carolyn McCall. She was speaking. The ITV chief executive was speaking to the Today programme and saying that this is all about bringing together the best of British creativity, and the research with the British public shows that there is a real appetite for a new streaming service in addition to their existing content. And that 43% of all homes which use the internet are interested in a subscription to something like BritBox, which is going to bring them kind of that British content, as Sam says. And I think that many people probably will want to have access to that archive. If you can go get all of the episodes of Absolutely Fabulous, or, you know, some niche programmes like The Thin Blue Line. Do you guys ever watch that?
No.
Rowan Atkinson.
No good things, though.
Really great classic Rowan Atkinson kind of programme. Those types of things. Like, I've got copies of those that are sitting around on DVDs somewhere in a drawer at the moment that are gradually going to, you know, kind of degrade. I don't even have a DVD player that I can hook up anywhere anymore, I think. So being able to access some of that stuff again probably is interesting. And to your point about things like Songs of Praise and stuff like that, that, you know, you can go back through a long, rich history of different, you know, worship traditions and content that's there. I think I would definitely want to be able to access some of that stuff. So we shall see how it goes with this. There is lots of you know, news coming out today just about this, so I'm sure we're going to be watching this one pretty closely in the coming weeks, and particularly whether or not this is going to stand up to some of the regulation, and whether or not it's going to kind of allow people to, you know, be competitive essentially against the really big American streaming services. Speaking of big American services, we've had the guys behind the YouVersion Bible app on the show a couple of times. We know them very well. Bobby Greenwald and Terry Storch and the team there at Life Church in the US. And they've come under maybe a little bit of flack this week from something that is got picked up actually in an article that I think originally started over here with in Premier Towers, where we're recording from, but was picked up this week by The Telegraph, around people sharing Bible passages on social media, particularly from apps like the Bible Lens and from the YouVersion app. But not just that, people also taking pictures of inspirational calendars, and things like Pinterest being a place where lots of people are creating this inspirational verse of the day, quote of the day type content. Earlier in the week, this article came out, and it was actually featuring another friend of ours from Dr. Pete Phillips as well, who's been looking at this from, who's the director of Codec Research Centre and Theology. And he was saying that, you know, before, John 3:16 was a poster boy text of the 20th century. The latest star is Jeremiah 29:11. Now, do either of you, can you recite
to me what that is? I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to do you good.
Give you a future and
give
a hope.
And a hope.
Excellent. Well done.
Thank you, Ruth, for coming to my aid at the
very, very good biblical knowledge. Well, apparently, according to Pete, Dr. Pete, of course, I will refer to you with your proper title, sir, Reverend Dr. Pete Phillips. that he, we're great for keeping up people's official titles on this show. I don't want to ruin that tradition. But Pete Phillips was talking about this as being that actually that passage that that Sam just beautifully recited for us with Ruth's help, Jeremiah 29:11, has kind of become the 21st century, you know, kind of poster child verse to be shared around. It does very, very well. And he was making this point that in print culture, John 3:16, which was the most kind of popular Bible verse ever, has kind of been knocked off of its edge. How do you guys feel about it? Do you regularly share kind of Bible verses and stuff like that on social media?
No.
Is that the kind of content you do?
No.
Oh dear, I feel that the misery part of Sam's day has risen again. Sam, why would you not share this stuff?
I do my best to read the Bible every day. The Bible is incredibly important to me as a Christian. I guess I haven't felt the need to share the Bible on social media, but as I say that, I'm starting to question myself. Why is that? Is that not part of my life? Should I not be doing it more? I think what has put me off in the past is exactly what you're talking about, James, which is the kind of lovely, pretty sunset and then a verse that kind of makes you feel good.
Yeah.
And that verse is often ripped out of all of its context. Jeremiah 29, as Ruth, I'm sure, is about to explain, being the theologian in the room, you know, it has a context. In fact, why don't you just tell us?
Yeah,
what was the context of Jeremiah 29? I don't know what the context
was. It's in the exile. So the Israelites are put in exile. So they're in this really difficult place where they're sort of split metaphorically between Jerusalem and Babylon, and they've been told to settle in Babylon and to pray for the land and to want the land to prosper. And so it's kind of it's a message of hope within real disarray. So actually, I think we often use it as a real lovey-dovey, like, oh, everything's going to be perfect. And actually, what we mainly take it out of context, because this was in the context of like incredible hopelessness.
Yeah.
And it's more of a look, God's got you. But yeah, we do rip that out of context.
Yeah.
I think the thing as well, I don't really share Bible verses, but I think a lot of that is because I think the Bible is power, and I believe that with all my heart. I love the Bible, but having said that, I think it's sometimes really unhelpful when we're just like shoving Bible verses out of context in non-Christians' faces. Because I think for a lot of, particularly sort of within post-modernity now, a lot of non-Christians, for them, they wouldn't even begin to engage with the Bible because they don't think it's true and they don't think it's relevant. And so there is that sort of pre-apologetic clearing away the mess before you can get to the truth of the gospel, I think, a lot of the time. And so I just think sometimes it's unhelpful to be sharing verses when it's just not helpful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting part about this, though, and this is something that Pete brings up as well, in he's working on a new book, which we will talk to him about in the coming episode, called The Bible, Digital Culture and Social Media. It's coming out later this year. He says that we find that millennials tend to share therapeutic messages. It's far more about their own identity and how faith can help them in the future. And the result is a shift in a public display of the Bible, which is quite a fascinating thing, is that we're actually seeing more, if you think about it, more than ever before, people publicly sharing the Bible in a physical open space. We're going to come to talk about prayer in public spaces later on, but this is, you know, kind of people very openly using their social media feeds to put the Bible in front of other people. It's the kind of the, you know, some would say at one end the digital equivalent of Bible bashing and just throwing Bible verses out and helping. But to Sam's point, you know, lots of these images coming from apps like the Bible app and YouVersion that I use very regularly as well. Do, you know, the quote, this article in the Telegraph today, which if you're looking for it, is titled Favourite Bible Passages Get Overhaul, and that's published on the 25th of February. There is a particularly evocative image here of a millennial looking chap staring out into the sunset with the verse aforementioned, Jeremiah 29:11, and in a nice, you know, kind of serif font, but then in a beautiful script at the bottom, a future and a hope being very highly accentuated. And it's not too dissimilar from some of these kind of more manifesting verses, or, you know, kind of positivity and spirituality verses that we see from non-Christian texts as well, that often get shared on things like Pinterest and Instagram as well. So maybe there's just a like slightly flippancy that's being created by all of this stuff. Maybe we're not taking the Bible seriously enough.
Although, having said that, I do, and Sam said this, so I'm just repeating what he said. But there is real power in the Bible, and I think even if we're taking stuff out of context, actually there is real power, and that's not to take... While I don't really do it for lots of different reasons, I think as someone sharing the Bible and someone reading that, you don't know what that's going to do, and I think God is bigger than all of people's issues and stuff
I have seen research that does kind of question how many people are looking at these Bible verses who are non-Christians. You know, if I put out a verse on my social media, how many people who don't share my faith are going to actually read it, like it, engage with it? And the research I've seen, perhaps unsurprisingly, would suggest that it's great for other Christians, it can encourage other Christians in their faith when you share the Bible, but it doesn't tend to attract so much interest from those who don't. And maybe that's to be expected, and I would agree that, look, at the end of the day, our job in everything, isn't it, is just to be faithful, and we leave the rest with God. And if you feel like it's a good thing and a helpful thing to share Bible verses, look, I as a Christian am never going to tell you off for doing that. Of course, that's a wonderful thing to do, and I don't want to be too critical, but I think it's a really the most interesting thing for me, and this is what Pete Phillips brought out in his article for us, and this is what the Daily Telegraph are talking about as well, is this distinction between truth, propositional truth, John 3:16, Jesus died for your sins, and therapeutic verses that just kind of make you feel warm and fuzzy. And you know, both are in the Bible, both are important, both should be shared, but what seems to be happening is it's just the therapeutic ones now that seem to be shared on social media, and ones which give propositional truth, or those which contain hard messages. Or you know, how many times have you seen people sharing you know, Jesus quotes about hell on social media, for example? It's probably not what gets shared around,
not going to get many likes
and
shares on that one.
This is kind of twisting that happens, where we've only got a very small part of the Bible being shared on social media, and I'm just not sure if that's ideal.
Yeah, well, then there's an interesting quote here from Rachel Rounds of the Bible Society, talking in this Telegraph article. She says, passages like John 3:16 concern an eternal perspective and hope beyond death, and they're not easy concepts to convey on social media, which doesn't really do context or nuance, and that's a challenge for politicians, scientists, and the church alike, which I think is a fair thing. We've seen lots of these things taken out of context. So, you know, I'm okay if some of these things get taken out of context and they encourage someone, or they do something that builds them up, or maybe inspires them to dig into the Bible more. But maybe it's just about, as Ruth was saying, we've got to be prepared to be able to follow that up with the explanation of why that stuff is being shared in the first place, right? So I think there's definitely more to be done here. Taking things out of context is what leads me to our third story from our news roundup this month, and it is well, I suppose funny. I would like to say funny, just because it's the parodies that have come out of this story are very funny. What I'm talking about, you may not have seen this, but if you have, then you'll know exactly what I'm talking about, is the story of South African pastor Alf Lucao, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, whose revival of a dead man has prompted all sorts of online mockery. This is a South African pastor who created a resurrection stunt and claims to have raised someone from the dead in South Africa. He was doing this whilst being filmed, a video from Alleluia Ministries International of him reviving a supposedly dead person came out and went viral, and laying his hands on a body that was dressed in a white suit and lying in a coffin, which is a rather interesting image. Very quickly, though, this sparked all sorts of other people reviving things all over the internet, and sitting up in people, I think people sitting up in a bath, children being re-magically reanimated by their teachers, all sorts of things. It's kind of making a slight mockery of the idea of the resurrection, I suppose, on the social media. But the Alleluia Church said that they have distanced themselves from the video, telling local media it was not a resurrection miracle, and the church has declined to comment further. But what I find really interesting is, as we are, obviously, we're here in the, you know, kind of just about to be on the cusp of March, as we head into kind of the Lenten season, starting, you know, over the next kind of week or so, and into Easter. And this concept of the resurrection still, you know, kind of people claiming to raise people from the dead causes real consternation, right? Creates real excitement. How many of these things can we trust? Should we be trusting resurrection miracles when we see them come out? Sam, when you guys come across these stories, how do you have to handle them?
Well, I actually saw in a Christian Facebook group that I kind of keep an eye on, a video being shared just the other day of you know, amazing miracles, someone's been risen from dead. And if I'm being completely honest, my immediate reaction was one of cynicism and skepticism. I didn't even watch the video. And then, of course, today we look at the news and it's all come out, and it's all over the BBC News about this wasn't a real resurrection. happen. And it's, as far as I can tell, it's the same video, same story that I saw the other day going around on social media. And I guess for me, the immediate takeaway was, come on, Christians, can we please be a little bit more careful before sharing content? Can we please do everything we can to verify that this stuff is real? Whether it's about our Christian faith, whether it's about politics, could be anything. It really upsets me when I see anyone, you know, falling for fake news or falling for scams. But I think when Christians do, I think, come on, we're supposed to be people of truth. And I think there is, all of us have a responsibility now as publishers, because if you're on social media, you are a publisher, to check it out, you know, to as much as possible, check Snopes.com or check wherever, check the kind of places that can tell you whether something's true or not. So look, I believe that God can raise people from the dead today. I believe it happens 100%. But I think as well, we're called to be people who use our brains, use reason, and check things before believing them. And this particular case is a sad example of a claimed miracle not being true whatsoever.
We're going to come in the next couple of weeks into the resurrection kind of story in earnest. Obviously Easter kind of coming up is going to, you know, raise this up again. Oh, sorry, that was a bad pun. Every year we see a flurry of media articles from all sorts of publications, both left and right, come in with a was the resurrection real story, you know, kind of thing. Is that something that we think is still getting resonance? Are people going to actually continue to pay attention to those things? And, you know, I don't particularly go and read those articles when they come out, because I feel like I've had the evidence explained to me and I believe it.
You've made your mind up either way.
For the people that haven't, you know, how effective is that stuff?
Well, here's the thing. I don't think an average person on the street cares at all about whether Jesus rose from the dead or not, because it doesn't affect their... Okay, so there's a guy called Andrew Root who talks about something called an imminent frame, which is like the life around you, effectively. So if the resurrection of Jesus doesn't affect like your immediate life, the life of your family, whatever, you're probably not really going to think about it. But suddenly something penetrates your imminent frame, so say someone you know is dying, or your dad leaves you, or suddenly you start questioning these big things, and suddenly you are interested in things like the resurrection. It probably wouldn't be straight away foray into the resurrection. It might be, if there's a God, why is he allowed suffering? Why has my dad left me? That then might lead into, what sort of God does exist? Oh, is it a God that rose from the dead? And suddenly you are interested in those things. But I don't think, just from a kind of level of nothing, people are suddenly interested in the resurrection, which is why I think actually we've got a real duty as Christians to share our story, to be, you know, it's all very well talking about sharing Bible verses, yes, that's important, but we also need to be the Bible, because people aren't just going to be thinking about these things and questioning these things without someone provoking it. So I love that verse in oh my gosh, I'm an apologist and I can't remember what it is.
Is it Jeremiah 29:11?
Is it 2 Peter 3:16? 2 Peter 3:16? Always be ready to give a reason for the hope that you have, but all of that, yeah. always be ready to give a reason for the hope that you have, but do with gentleness and respect. But I think as well that verse assumes that people will ask you questions. Always be ready to give a reason to the hope that, like, that people ask you, and I think that implies that we're living a provocative life. And I think actually that's one of the great advantages that we have working in the media, is that we can live a provocative life surrounded by non-Christians, but often we don't, because it's much easier not to.
Yeah, Timothy 2:15, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, or who incorrectly handles the word of truth, I think is quite a helpful thing to add to that as well. So yeah, absolutely, paying attention to, you know, kind of actually the truth that we, you know, profess, you know, that's the thing that we're doing. I just wonder that every year we see these stories come back out, and people trying to kind of make the case for the resurrection or make the case against the resurrection, predominantly it's the latter, and whether or not that actually does anything to the public's consciousness of it or not. I think this idea of an immediate frame is actually a really helpful one, is that we actually have this come to us through lived personal experience more than anything else.
I also think there's something about, so I used to work quite a lot with a guy called John Lennox, who is an emeritus Oxford maths professor, super smart guy, and he used to go into schools a lot, and he would immediately command authority because he's an Oxford maths professor, so the kids will immediately listen to what he's got to say, because he's a scientist talking about a miracle actually happening. And so I think it's all very well us talking about it, but there is something to be said for actually someone who is a real person of authority speaking to that.
That does still surprise some people. I have had conversations with people before where they're like, wait, you actually believe in miracles? You actually believe in all this stuff? And it's sad, I think, really, but there are some people out there who, for want of a better term, let's call them secular people, who just haven't quite got their head around this idea that there are real, switched on, intelligent people in this world who still believe in the supernatural, who still believe in a God. That, you know, that is a view I've encountered before. And I think for those kinds of people, it's very helpful around Easter, around Lent, to be putting out videos and articles from, you know, intelligent people like Tom Wright, for example, you know, one of the world's greatest New Testament scholars, who is absolutely adamant that the physical resurrection of Jesus from the dead was a real historical event. And so those sorts of, I guess, fairly intellectual takes on the resurrection, they're definitely going to appeal to some people. But I thought Ruth's point about, you know, being a living kind of embodiment of what Christ's resurrection has done in us, I think that can be even more powerful for a lot of people.
Well, and that is one of the views that we'll probably be returning to over the stories in next month's episode around Easter. In between now and then, what I want to tell you about is a little announcement. We are actually on the hire here at Christians in Media. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Okay, well, we're hiring, so woo-hoo. If you know anybody. We're looking for a new social media officer for Christians in Media. Ooh. This is really about helping us engage with social media well. It's not just about tweeting pictures of Jeremiah 29:11, but what we are asking is for a social media officer to come and work about one day a week for Christians in Media and work with the producing team. You'll be get to work along wonderful people like us on the podcast, as well as also the events team and other organisers in the broader organisation. And we're really looking for someone to help build the social media strategy, really engage on content and help get people out. If that could be you, or you know somebody that it could be, closing date for applications is the 31st of March, and we will be following up with people in April, so please do get in touch. You can do that by emailing the Christians in Media team, and all the information about that is over on christiansinmedia.co.uk. Okay, coming up after the break, we're going to be discussing prayer in Parliament and in your workplace. As a Christian, are you praying regularly in your workplace, and what does it mean for you? Coming up after this.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
So, this past month, there was an excellent article in a very prestigious magazine, Sam Hales. The magazine is called Christianity, edited by our one and only Sam Hales, just across the road from me. An article from...
this is such a lovely plug. Please continue.
I'll keep going for now, but you're not going to get many more of these. An article here from Gary Streeter, MP. He's the Member of Parliament for South West Devon and the Chair of Christians in Parliament. And he was talking particularly about a recent move by a section of MPs who are backed by the National Secular Society, who are calling for the daily practice of saying prayers at the beginning of parliamentary business to be abolished. Sam, maybe what you can tell us a little bit more about this kind of article and what Gary's perspective was, but this is the, you know, kind of the fact that every time the you know, kind of parliamentary business starts, prayers are said. It's one of the only places outside of Christian schools up and down the country where that's still the case. Yeah. Why is this an issue? Why is it contentious?
Yeah, it's amazing actually how relatively few numbers of Christians sometimes are even aware this happens, but as you say, every single day in Parliament, right here in London, our MPs gather and prayers are said. Christian prayers are said every day. And perhaps unsurprisingly, in today's culture and climate, there are number of MPs who think that this is wrong, who think that, well, why should the Christian religion have a privileged place at all? Why should any religion be brought into politics? Shouldn't we keep our politics separate from our religion? And they, I think this is the interesting point, they are suggesting that it would be better to have a kind of neutral idea of no prayers at all. And I think what Gary Streeter does so well in that piece, he points out that actually removing God completely does not give you a neutral perspective. So it's an excellent article, just arguing. Obviously, Gary is a Christian himself, and Gary is arguing for a number of different reasons that prayers should carry on being said in Parliament. And of course, it should be said, you know, if you're a if you're an MP who doesn't want to partake in prayers, then you don't have to. You know, this isn't no enforcing everyone. No. This is just for those who want to do it. And I think it's amazing, actually. If you go into Central Lobby, and again, not many people know this, but you would have seen it obviously on the TV where all the MPs are gathering before going into the chamber. If you go into the middle of Central Lobby and look at the floor, there's this big circle in the kind of tiles, and round the outside, written in Latin, and I take this on advice because I don't know Latin myself.
But please try.
It's a quote from the Bible, and it says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the labourers work in vain." And I think that's amazing. We've got that quote from the Bible right in the middle of where we make our laws in this country. And thankfully, I haven't heard any MPs campaigning to get that removed just yet. you know, and actually, you can do tours around Parliament. I encourage you to do it. And you know, if you get a good tour guide, I actually had Andy Flanagan show me around. He was great. And he pointed out all the different Christian stuff. So as you go up, you see a very early piece of legislature being made, is the way Andy put it. And you look up, and it's actually a painting of Moses with the Ten Commandments. So, you know, there's kind of Christian heritage and history all over Parliament, and one of the places that happens is prayers every day. And from a Christian point of view, obviously, I hope that continues, and I hope these MPs don't get their way.
Well, that's exactly what I think we're all hoping for, if you want to believe in prayer being important. Ruth, you have to deal with this from time to time, with people talking about prayer in schools and stuff. Does this come up a lot when you're working on stuff for the magazine?
Yeah, it does. And I think it's a sort of similar issue in that it's not necessarily enforced on people, but if you opt to send your child to a Church of England school, the understanding is that there will be a certain amount of religious content within that, because that's the school that you've opted into, or a Catholic school, or, you know, a school of any sort of faith. But I think it's really interesting, because obviously I've worked in Christian organisations and I've worked in secular organisations, and ironically, not all the organisations I've worked for, but when I worked at the BBC, I actually think I prayed more with my colleagues than I have done in a lot of the Christian organisations that I've worked for.
I was once at the agency I used to work for before I worked at Lego, the toy company. We had a small Christian union of about five or six of us that kind of regularly met every couple of weeks to pray for people, and that had a real tangible part of my faith. Like, I felt more connected to God, I think, during that time doing that, and with my colleagues that I did that with every single day, than when I've kind of been on teams or staff teams within churches or other things like that, where it's like it's almost so commonplace to pray together that you almost don't think about it as how it bonds you together.
Well, I think in the Christian organisation as well, it's kind of taken as read that you're all kind of on the same page, and there might almost be, dare I say it, less of a need to sort of come together and to pray. Whereas if you're...
It's not okay though.
Well, yeah, sure. I'm not
calling
saying,
it out. No.
I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying it is, but I think if you're in a non-Christian environment, that it does allow you to introduce prayer as a bit of a kind of novelty, and it is something a bit different, and you are a bit more on the edge of things, and that's fantastic. And it can be an evangelistic element to it. Whereas if you're in a Christian organisation, I think, well, everyone's kind of on the same page already, there's less of a...
Absolutely. We've been wrestling with this recently. I mentioned to you guys before we started recording, I've just started doing a new startup business with a co-founder who isn't a Christian, and we've had to like work out, well, what type of culture do we want in the business? And I've been very clear, it's like, yeah, I am a Christian, I'm going to pray about things that, like, I believe that when this deal comes off that God might have had a hand in it, because I've been praying about it and thinking about it. I believe that he's ordained some of these things. And she doesn't necessarily believe those things, but really respects the fact that that's my perspective of it. Her version of it would be like manifesting those things, being able to say those things out into the universe, which is, you know, obviously a fairly spiritualist kind of discipline of a similar thing, of people just believing, of putting out positive vibes, or call it karma or whatever it might be. But we've had to have this active discussion about like prayer and actually like where it falls into our livelihoods, and it's brought this question up. I think for a lot of listeners, you guys might be listening and thinking, well, yeah, I'm in a you know secular publication, I'm maybe the only Christian I know, or maybe there's a few of me around praying together. Like, what are your tips of kind of like when you guys do come together in workplace contexts or people places you've worked before, what type of prayer helps the most?
So I used to run the Christian Fellowship at the BBC, a television centre, and that was honestly beautiful, and like some of my best friends came through that because we were so bonded over that. So it was every Wednesday lunchtime, and for like the first 5 minutes we'd just catch up and chat about stuff, and then one of us would share a devotion or whatever it was, and then we would we would leave a good chunk of time to pray for each other. And often it was really meaty issues, and it was people represented right across the board, and, you know, from high up execs to PAs to, again, it was the whole remit. But I also found that a lot of the news guys couldn't necessarily come to that because obviously they were doing news hour and things like that. So I also then started a breakfast. So we'd meet at 6:30 in the in the staff canteen twice a week. And it was always packed. And we would just sit and pray, and again, like, made really amazing friendships through that.
How did that kind of thing start? Was it because people knew that you were already Christians, you had a few friends around, or could you actively publicise things like that?
So I took over the Christian fellowship from someone else.
You took over, that sounds right.
But I found... But I found that by... we had the BBC intranet, so I that's how I discovered that to start with. The breakfast, that was just that just came from people not being able to make the Christian fellowship. And so I had a huge like email list, and there was wasn't that many people that came to the Christian Fellowship, and I was trying to figure out why that was. But also, it just was really beautiful because I think there's something, it's a little bit like what I say our magazine is. It's that sense in which if you're a youth and a children's worker, you can often feel like you are the only person going through this stuff. Like if your kid is really struggling with mental health issues, you think you are the only youth worker who's ever gone through that. And that's a really isolating thing. And it's often the same if you're a Christian working in the media. And I think the thing about the Christian Fellowship was, even if you didn't come every Wednesday, even if you didn't come at all, just to know that, like when you got that email, all of you are Christians in the media, and that's really encouraging. And you know that you I would always ask for prayer requests, and we would always pray for those people.
I think some of these kind of organisational bodies that, you know, it's when it's the most powerful. In a couple of weeks time, we're heading up to Manchester with the Church of England for the second year running. We're doing the Digital Labs event that myself and James Dock, who runs Kingdom Code, friend of the show, has done before with the team there, and Adrian Harris and the team, bringing everyone together again. And last year when we did that for the first time, one of the most powerful things was actually having, you know, kind of 60 or 70 technologists in a room who are like, oh, actually we all work in the same space, but we work in all different organisations, and we are praying and worshipping together. And actually that moment of doing that collectively can be so powerful. So if you guys are listening and you're looking for opportunity to pray with one another, there are things that we can do. There's a couple of meetup events coming up in the coming weeks. If you want to find out more about those, go to the website christiansandmedia.co.uk. particularly if you're in the Leeds Bradford area, we've got something coming up in April for you, and if you're in London, we've got future meetups coming up down the line. But if you're looking for people to pray with, why don't you join a couple of the different groups? You can do that by joining in the conversation around the show. Use hashtag Signal on Twitter, follow us over there, and you can also join the Christians in Media Facebook group as well, which is another place where you might be able to find people to pray with, either in small pairs or groups. So we'd love it if you were praying for the media yourselves and praying with one another. Hope that that's an encouragement. So we're going to keep discussing these things, more topics coming up in future episodes, but glad that we're getting you praying. Coming up after this very short blip, we're going to talk a little bit about recommendations, and Sam has something. Come on then, Sam. What have you got for your recommendations?
I have something. Oh, my word.
Ominous.
So basically, to fill everyone in on the details on this one, every recommendation I came up with, I was told that's really old.
Granddad Sam.
I'm sorry, but that Coldplay documentary can't be more than about 3 months old. I loved it.
Hang on a minute.
Fine, whatever,
Coldplay
won't talk about
fell off the planet about 4 years ago.
No, I'm sorry, Ruth. You're wrong. You're 100% wrong. Anyway, moving on. My recommendation, in the end, I came up with Safe, which is a drama on Netflix. And we were talking earlier in the show about the possibilities of BritBox, and I was talking about how, you know, a lot of the TV we watch on Netflix is American. Well, the nice thing about Safe is it's not American, it's British. It's British produced, British actors, it's a British drama, and it's really, really well done. I'm just two episodes away from the finale, so I don't know how it ends.
What's the premise? Yet.
The premise is basically a young girl goes missing in a gated community.
Yep.
So the police get involved. And what's very, very clever is the series focuses probably on about four or five different families, and there seems to be all these kind of other subplots going on. And of course, as the show develops, you realise actually all these subplots are linked, and we're getting towards the end now, and I'm thinking, well, how are they going to tie up all the strands together?
Yeah.
Just brilliant acting, scripting.
Yeah, the lead is Michael C. Hall, who plays the character of Dr. Tom Delaney, who's the father of the girl that goes missing. Interestingly, if that name rings a bell, you're like, who is that? That is Dexter, if you ever watched show, playing a very different role and doing a very convincing British accent as well, which I might also point out. So yeah, really interesting.
I hadn't even realised that was him putting on a British accent.
Yes, and playing across from Amanda Abingdon.
All of
the
other
sergeant.
Actors are British, aren't they?
Yes, pretty much everyone else. Okay. I think it's a nearly all British cast, but yeah, he is not. But it's a really, really well put together show. Very tense. Highly recommend
one. I'm glad that recommendation made it past the vetters. Thank you, James, and thank you, Ruth, for allowing me to make that recommendation.
Found something
I'm sorry,
genuinely
listeners,
good and relevant.
I'm sorry, listeners, about the other five that didn't make it
you
through.
You have to try harder this month to watch something actually
Sam's
new.
Sam's going to have to start doing his own like Throwback Thursday podcast of things that you've missed.
Everything
from a few
he's
months
watched.
Ago.
When are we doing that podcast where we explain technology to Ruth?
Yes, please.
Coming 2020. Okay, good. Ruth, what's your recommendation for this month?
So I was invited by Home for Good, which is an amazing adoption and fostering charity, to a screening of Instant Family, which is a Mark Wahlberg and a Rose Byrne comedy around a family who are fostered initially and then adopted. And it was simultaneously absolutely heartbreaking and side-splittingly hilarious. And I wrote a blog about it.
Two things that you don't necessarily associate instantly with when you say...
Adoption.
Comedy, adoption, and Mark Wahlberg in the same sentence. They don't always lend themselves to that. But actually, this is doing really, really well, both at the box office and critically as well. Yeah. 7.5 stars over on IMDb and doing very well on Rotten Tomatoes as well. So, or tomatoes, depending on where you are.
always tomatoes.
Yeah,
so
like,
I called
actually
it...
seems very funny.
Yeah, I called it the film of 2019.
Yeah, which I think is a bold prediction.
I love
the way we have an actual real human being in Ruth in front of us telling us it's a funny film, and James has to go check on a digital website called Rotten Tomatoes whether it actually is funny or not.
We're basing this on Ruth's sense of humour and whether that is funny or not. So let's temper these things.
But I think the thing I love about it, obviously I work with young people all the time, and all I write about is young people
it's
and children.
Because you never mention
sure.
it.
Sure. So, like, it's incredibly relevant for my audience. But having said that, I feel like it's relevant for everyone because 40,000 children and young people go into care every year in the
wow.
UK. And I was just telling Sam earlier, when you hit 6 years old in this country, you are no longer eligible for adoption. You are put
crazy.
Into long-term foster care. It's horrific. So, you know, it's kind of a film about just how heartbreaking this situation is, but actually how life-changing it can be. And there's one line which I can't remember, I think Mark Wahlberg says it, and he says, things that matter are hard. And actually that is kind of the theme of the film, that yes, it's funny and yes, it's lighthearted, but actually it's incredibly difficult to do some of these things, but things that matter are hard. And it really, really challenged me to my core, to the point where me and my husband looked at each other after the film and we were like, I think we need to adopt, don't we? And I'm not, that's
wow.
not an easy decision to
no.
make, you know, I do think you're called to do that, but I just think when there are 40,000 children in care, we have got to do something about it. And as the church, we are perfectly set up to do that. You might not feel called to adoption, but actually you can support a family that's doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And there's lots of information that's, I think, coming out because of this
yeah.
film, actually, which is an interesting one because these types of comedies don't always spark
yeah.
that, but
well,
there's definitely an appeal for it.
Yeah, and the director and producer has adopted children himself, so part of it is sort of, you know, it's not entirely...
Yeah, I think things are really changing, though, because Krish Kandaya, who heads that charity you mentioned, Home for Good, was telling me just the other day that he's seeing now millennial couples... not just millennials, but a lot of millennial couples are coming and wanting to adopt, not because they can't have kids, but because adoption is a first choice for them and they don't know whether they're fertile or not. They just believe in adoption. So I do wonder if we're seeing a bit of a culture shift on this. And I do think the work of Home for Good is pretty inspiring because, you know, Chris has been banging this drum for years now.
Yeah.
And I have seen in that time more and more Christians I know, more and more churches I know, taking this seriously. And it does seem like, you know, as the months pass, more and more Christians I know are adopting kids. And I think that's a wonderful testament.
Well, that's what I love about the fact that it's not just like a niche art house film that only Christians are going to watch. This is a Hollywood blockbuster with two massive Hollywood actors, and it's brilliantly done, and so it's properly put adoption and fostering on the map.
Well, that's a fantastic recommendation, and you should definitely go do it, not just the adoption bit, but go see the movie as well.
Yeah, I wrote a blog about it for both you and me, didn't I?
Which
says a little bit more about some of the important
the
things.
Premier Christianity or the Premier Youth and Children's Work magazine websites to read that one. I prefer you went to Premier Christianity, but you know they're available on both.
I prefer you went to Youth and Children's Work.
I'm just going to dim their mics while they stop plugging things, and we'll see where we go. Okay, well, there you go. Some recommendations for you guys to kick into, and that I will just add one last one, which is a little book that Sam actually handed to me earlier today, which
oh,
I've been flicking through.
It's probably really old,
and
James.
It is old, and no, it's actually.
I also
not that
know
old.
You haven't read it, James, because
no,
I saw you pick it
I
up.
Handed
just
it to you
now.
I haven't read it, but I have actually read just one of these short articles in here, and I'm going to read into it more. So I think if you're into this whole topic of faith at work, which obviously is a large part of probably why you listen to this show, this is a small book compiled by James Slater of Workplace Testimonies of Young Christian Professionals, called Faith at Work. It's part of, I believe, Revelation Church London, and just a really interesting little
little series. So if you are thinking about wanting some testimonies to kind of tick into, this is actually a really nice little compilation. So I'm going to recommend that, Faith at Work, compiled by James Slater. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this month's episode, and thank you very much, guys, for your usual level of comedy and insults, and thank you to all of you for listening. You've been listening to Signal from Christians in the Media. If you want to be our social media officer and want to come and work with people like us, well, I can't quite understand why you might want to, but give it a go.
Do it.
You love go it. Apply for that, go find out all of the information about that and more of what we've got coming for you in the coming weeks and months over at christiansinmedia.co.uk. And we would love it if you joined us on social media as well. Join the Facebook group and the Twitter handle, and you can get more from us every single month. We'll be back in March with more discussion around how faith is changing in the media and the people that are making it behind it. And we will see you very soon here on Signal from Christians in the Media. Bye bye.
Bye. Sam doesn't care.
Did you even say bye?
Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.